I don't know that I've seen anything get such positive response from such a diverse group of people. And I think that terrifies the people that I sing about in that song. And they've done everything they can the last 2 weeks to make me look like a fool, to spin my words, to try to stick me in a political bucket. And they can keep trying, but I'm just going to keep on writing. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. This sculpted narrative goes out to all the giants upon whose shoulders I stand. If I can see further, it is only because of their storied vision. Let me begin with Richard Feynman.
Richard Feynman was one of the... What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? Trev here with another episode of Spread Love FM, the podcast, and I'd like to say hello to all of my neighbors out there. Thank you for joining me and for spending this time with us. And today's show, we will have Oliver Anthony Explains. We have a video of him post the viral sensation that he put out there for us. And then we have another podcast from Tangle. Tangle, Politics from All Sides, The Myth of the Left versus the Right. We also have a few other good things for you as usual, so stay tuned. Of course, we'll start with our announcements. Hello, neighbor. Hello, neighbor. We want to connect our neighbors, community, connecting neighbors. We need your support. We have free groceries, free lunches, and in order to provide these free services, we are supported by community, supported by small businesses. As little as $5 per month for our neighbors to support. Supporting neighbors, paying it forward. So we head on over to Hello Neighbor, scan the code, and support us in any way you like. And if you are in the Spring Hill, Florida area, and you need to pick up some free lunches or free groceries, scan the code, place your free order on our website, spreadlovefm.com, and we will see you at Miguel's Latin Market on Sunday. So that is our announcements for today. So let's jump into the show. Before we get into anything, I want to start with actually our 20th Century Journal. I have another passage that I would like to share. It's a short one this week, and this deals with the... let me just get into it. Dated February 14th, 1992, I was 21 years old, and I read, I was thinking... What crossed my mind was the fact that I was probably a very maladjusted person. And the thing about being maladjusted is that you don't really realize it until you become adjusted. You just accept that it is a part of you and try to live the best with what you have. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, but I do believe does inhibit one's potential to grow fully. I believe that is the only way someone will take this advice if they are seeking personal growth. And that brings me to this. I strongly believe my desire for fame is the result of me being maladjusted. And I touched on this in my first journal. I believe many artists, and certainly those who chase their dreams mainly for fame, are somehow maladjusted. It is a want for power beyond that of the normal person, but I'm not positive of this. After all, politicians have this thirst for power, and they seem very adjusted. Right. So that's the end of that reading. The Right was my own 21st century insertion. Obviously, I was way off on that politicians being adjusted. Just a little bit of context at the time, it wasn't very political. I'm actually surprised that I was as aware of the harm of the want for power and fame at that age. Yeah, I read some of these and I'm like, wow, that's pretty introspective for a 21-year-old, considering that they're very similar to the thoughts I have today. So take it for what it's worth. I'm growing and learning how, even today, how not to be that person. A lot of the social media sabbatical has to do with that as well. The want for fame can be translated for the wants for likes and engagement. And this is what big tech uses to capitalize on your attention. And not to mention the harm that it does in our politics and our economics. So I read that just to make people aware that, yes, at that age, if I hadn't seen advice to my 21-year-old self, if I had seen the harm that it would have done in my life, the road, the end of that road, the empty end to that road, then I would have told my 21-year-old self. Well, in a way, I was telling my 21-year-old self that at the age of 21, that is not healthy and is not sustainable. So take it for what it's worth. That's the 20th Century Journals for this week. And hopefully there's a young person out there who will heed this advice. Yeah, there we go. All right, so let's get into the show. So this week, I want to get back into this. The entirety of last week was spent on the Oliver Anthony full circle, from the introduction to the coming to grips with the viral response to the posting of my response to his video, and how trying to get back, find my compass in terms of getting away from that attention seeking and the algorithmic thinking, as I called it. And I spoke about that in the second of the trilogy. And in the third installment, I reconnected with my friend who introduced me to the video, who we had parted ways over time. And it was a really very fulfilling week. And I thank my friend for sending this video to me, and Oliver Anthony for creating this video. And there's a part of me that doesn't want to be, you know, just playing the algorithm game and just putting Oliver Anthony just to get views. And but at the same time, there's another part of me that says this is important. This is a road in. This is a way to connect. This is a way for people across the social and political spectrum to have a conversation. This is an unparalleled ascension from an unknown artist to being a part of the dialogue, from neighbors connecting to media outlets discussing. And it feels like it's more than just playing the algorithmic game. But there is that part of me that says that, yes, this is unhealthy, because it's hard to avoid that. You know, I find myself daily looking at the numbers. I spoke about this in the second of the trilogy. And I'm still there. I'm still looking at the numbers and hoping that it continues, hoping that it would stop, that I'll be forced to kind of go back to just telling the story for the connection and the meaning that it brings me. And I'm getting back there slowly. Maybe there's a balance I need to find. But until I figure that out, I am going to just go with the flow where God is speaking to me and guiding me. And I feel like connecting is important. And as I said in a previous episode, there is, you know, I in we, but there is a I in testify. So if I have to shine the light on myself and on this podcast as a testimony to others, to community, then that's fine. I will live with whatever ramifications come from that. So with that being said, I do want to share this video, and I don't want to comment too much about it before I start it because I think it speaks for itself. So let's play it, and I will interject.
If there is anything for me to address at all with you, it's that you know, it's the one thing that has bothered me is seeing people wrap politics up into this. I'm disappointed to see, like, it's aggravating seeing people on conservative news try to identify with me like I'm one of them. It's aggravating seeing certain musicians and politicians act like we're buddies and act like we're fighting the same struggle here, like that we're trying to present the same message. You know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me, and I've tried to be polite to everybody, and I've talked to hundreds of people the last 2 weeks. But it seems like certain people want to just ride the attention of this song to maybe make them their own selves relevant, and that's aggravating as hell. The other thing that I find aggravating is, well, you know, like, it was funny seeing my song in the, it was funny seeing it at the presidential debate. Because it's like, I wrote that song about those people, you know? So for them to have to sit there and listen to that, that cracks me up. But it was funny kind of seeing the response to it. Like, that song has nothing to do with Joe Biden, you know? It's a lot bigger than Joe Biden. That song's written about the people on the on that stage, and a lot more too, not just them, but definitely them. It's cool seeing some of my other music come out because people are, I guess, starting to appreciate and understand what it is I'm really trying to say. It's hard to get a message out about your political ideology or your belief about the world in 3 minutes and some change. But I do hate to see that song being weaponized. Like I see the right trying to characterize me as one of their own, and I see the left trying to discredit me, I guess in retaliation. That shit's got to stop. If you watch the response videos on YouTube to the song, it's not conservative people responding to the song. It's not even necessarily Americans responding to the song. I don't know that I've seen anything get such positive response from such a diverse group of people. And I think that terrifies the people that I sing about in that song. And they've done everything they can the last 2 weeks to make me look like a fool, to spin my words, to try to stick me in a political bucket. And they can keep trying, but I'm just going to keep on writing. And I've got a lot of words to put down on paper, and I've got a lot of songs to put to chords, and I don't know what my music career is going to look like. I don't know how many shows I'm going to do and how many tours I'm going to put on, but I am going to stay true to my word. I'm going to write, produce, and distribute authentic music that represents people and not politics. I do feel compelled to address something. Since I have addressed the conservatives, I do need to address the left as well, because they're sending a message out that initial song that sort of shot me up the radar, Richmond North of Richmond, is an attack against the poor. If you listen to my other music, it's obvious that all of my songs that reference class defend the poor. Doggone, it's a good example of that. Needles in the street, folks hardly surviving on sidewalks next to highways full of cars self-driving. The poor keep hurting and the rich keep thriving. It's like, that's what I like to sing about. And you know, the English language is interpretive, and so I do understand, like, there may be some people who misunderstood my words in Richmond, north of Richmond. But I've got to be clear that my message, like with any of my songs, it references the inefficiencies of the government because of the politicians within it that are engulfed in bribes and extortion. And you know, the words say that there's people on the street with nothing to eat in the obese milk and welfare. That references a news article I read earlier this summer that adolescent kids in Richmond are missing meals over the summer because their parents can't afford to feed them and they're not in school to eat cafeteria lunch.
You know, so initially I was, you know, I was thinking that the song was, you know, that's enough of Oliver Anthony. We got the message. Let's see how we can carry that message as far as we can. And but let's not get into the, you know, everything Oliver Anthony says is algorithmic gold. But then when I saw this clip on another show, it really did speak to me. And what it was saying loud and clear is integrity. You know, it would be so easy for him to side with one side of the political spectrum or the other side of the political spectrum. We've seen it countless times, and I don't know if I've seen it where an artist who is, you know, front and center at the Republican debate, song playing, asking about it, and he just says, no, these are the people I am talking about. The very people who were embracing his music, the very people who reached out to me and said, oh, why are you embracing this guy? He's the voice of the right wing. You've seen it everywhere. The headline, right wing. The right wing finds its anthem, whatever, however they phrase it. And to hear him say this really speaks to the integrity. After hearing that, I really felt like, wow, this is somebody who, you think of some of the iconic artists who stood for something. What comes to mind for me is the Bob Dylans, the Bob Marleys, the Fela Kutis, the short list, you know. And none of them went from obscurity to number one. None of them. So it really struck a chord in the same way his first song did. And I really wanted to just play that for people to hear, you know, that this is somebody who is out there to spread a message, regardless of who embraces him. I mean, that's how you would imagine it working. No, he's embraced by the right wing. So let's play into that so that, you know, even he could, you know, he could have still keep his integrity and say, okay, I think that if I embrace them, then my message will go out to more people. He could easily say that, you know. That's, I almost expect him to say that. I mean, what I might say that, you know, do I have that integrity to, if I'm embraced by either party, to say that, oh yeah, it's the ends justifies the means. Easily he could have said that, but he chose to right there nip it in the bud and say that, no, these are the people I am speaking out against. And it inspires me to fight and to stay true. So I just want to share that because I think it's important to hear that. It's, you know, if I've listened to some podcasts, some of my favorite podcasts left on the left side of the political spectrum, and this threw them for a loop as well. And it was what my friend, who introduced me to Oliver Anthony was trying to get across, and it is what the gist of our conversation was about staying independent minded and about the nuance. And I just want us to keep that in mind before, because now that he hasn't fully embraced the right, in the way that they were expecting, or the left, he's got a path to walk that's not going to be easy. And I pray for him. I pray that his message, and that him, he himself, his name is actually Christopher Oliver Anthony, which is the opposite of AOC, or some, I use that in the acronym I'll share later. But COA, there I go, making a political reference. So even I have some growing to do. But about that, we should all give each other a little bit of grace. And I touch on this in my previous video. Love requires grace, and people are trying to tear his song apart and looking to see where his real political affiliation may lie, and who was he really supporting. And yeah, it's pray for him that he will stay strong, but also that his message does not get diluted or warped, or used. It's almost, it's a tall task for anyone, but it's a task that, if anyone is gonna kind of make it through that minefield, it will require the type of integrity that, at least in this video, that I see. So yeah, so there we go. Now, what I would like to do is I'd like to share our podcast reviews from a podcast called Tangle Tangle, and it's politics from all sides. And this is going to be a little bit lengthy, about 20 minutes of clips. I'll jump in every 5 minutes or so, but I really want you to hear this, because it was recorded actually, I think, in 2022, but I was just searching for, I forgot what it is, but it took me to this podcast. And it makes a lot of sense, and it speaks to the clip that we shared with Oliver Anthony earlier about not taking sides and not aligning. And it speaks to what me and my friend who reconnected over this song was speaking about, the nuance. And it speaks to even the podcast that I did in review of Oliver Anthony, when I speak about economics and capitalism and how I regret using the ism, and how for a long time before that I didn't use the ism because people will put you in a box. Oliver Anthony speaks to that. My podcast after my Oliver Anthony review speaks to that. And yeah, so I'm gonna play this. It's the myth of right and left, and the person who is speaking is his name is Chaim Lewis. He wrote a book, and he was interviewed on this podcast, Tangle. So here we go. I'll meet you as I do on the other side of this clip.
I guess, what are you seeing in terms of the changes about how people are framing left and right, and how are those definitions changing in a way that you think is sort of muddying the waters in this conversation?
So that's the central fallacy. That's the myth that we're trying to take on, is the idea that there's these fixed poles. There's something essential called left wing and something essential called right wing. And we can place everybody on this magic line between these two sides, and you can move further to the left, move further to the right. That's utterly ridiculous. And the reason being is because what the left and right stand for is constantly changing. People in the 1950s who stood for free speech were considered radical left wing, and people like Senator McCarthy were considered radical right wing because they were opposed to free speech. Fast forward here 70 years, and now there's people making the same McCarthyite arguments. They're saying certain ideas are dangerous, certain ideas are totalitarian, certain ideas we have to stop them because they do harm, they're violence. This is exactly what Senator McCarthy said 70 years ago, and yet the sides saying this have switched. So what was once considered left-wing is now considered right-wing. So you just go through the whole range of policy issues, and there's nothing so essential to the right-wing tribe today that it wasn't at some point considered part of the left-wing tribe and vice versa. So since what the left and right mean are always changing, you can't move towards something that's constantly evolving in its meaning. When George W. Bush moved the Republican Party in a big government direction, they said he'd move the party to the right. When Ronald Reagan moved the party in a small government direction, they said he'd move the party to the right. So it's ridiculous. Which is big government? Is it right wing or left wing? We have no idea, because Adolf Hitler was a socialist and he's considered extreme right wing. George W. Bush was the most radical expansion government president in my lifetime, and he's considered right wing. And then Ronald Reagan, of course, moved the party in a small government direction. You look at the Iraq War. Well, they say, well, George W. Bush was right wing because he invaded Iraq, and invading Iraq is very right wing. Well, then along comes Donald Trump and says, you know, the invasion of Iraq was a bad thing. We shouldn't have done it. Did people say, well, the Republican Party has moved to the left? No, they said, no, he's moved it even further to the right. So what does right wing mean? Nothing. It's a completely meaningless designation. We should throw these terms out, at least substantively. Now, I think when you use the term, as I understand you, and this is correct, is it does refer to tribes. There is certainly a tribe that calls itself right wing. There's no question about that. And there's a tribe that calls itself left wing. No question about that. But what these tribes stand for is constantly evolving. So you can't move rightward or leftward because these things are not static. They're constantly evolving. And they basically just whatever the political party that is associated with each wing stands for is what right wing and left wing means. So why don't we just throw out the terms right wing and left wing and just call it as it is and say Republican and Democrat? That would clarify so much and get rid of the illusion that there's some kind of philosophical core behind what each party believes, because that's simply not true.
So yeah, this is it's making too much sense. But let me not comment yet. Let's hear another clip, because it just goes on to make even more sense. Just too much sense. Too much sense.
The left they define as this collectivism, community over the individual, equality, environmental protection, expanded educational opportunities, social safety nets for those who need them. And then they define the right as individualism, individual over the community, limited government with individual freedom and personal property rights, competition. And when I read them now, you know, I can see you smiling. It's very clear to me where the kind of contradictions are, but I'd love to get your reaction to that and why you feel like these kinds of definitions that are out there and prominent. I think this is probably a pretty prominent way somebody, most politically informed people, would define the left and the right. What do you see about those definitions that sort of drives you mad into writing a whole book about this?
Because it's nonsense, top to bottom. The idea that the left wing is more collectivist and the right wing is more individualist is just ridiculous. Adolf Hitler was a collectivist. The right wing believes in limited government. Look, Mussolini said everything in the state, everything for the state, nothing outside the state. State, 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 state. Those are all considered right wing. Militarism is considered right wing. Is militarism not communal? Is militarism not statist? Is militarism not big government? This just doesn't square. When we say things, we ought to be able to test them as propositions. That's what makes something rational. That's what makes something scientific. And when you test this definition, it just comes up against reality and is proven to be falsified. So we have to follow science. And the scientific method is about hypothesis and falsification. And the hypothesis they put forward there is just easily, easily falsified. But furthermore, I'm interested because you listed a whole bunch of things. So if there is a whole bunch of things in politics, why are we pretending there's just one? Look, a political spectrum can only model one dimension. What's the one issue there? They listed what? You mentioned probably six or seven or eight. So shouldn't we be using seven or eight spec? Why are they just using one line to model a whole bunch of issues? So either there's a whole bunch of issues, in which case we ought to stop talking about left-wing, right-wing, moving right, moving left, and trying to model things on a single spectrum, or there is just one issue and that works. But if there is just one issue, which one is it? And then that's when we get into the big fallacy. People say, well, the one issue is change versus permanence. Liberals and progressives and the left, they like change, and conservatives like to preserve.
I used to use that one.
It's just simply not true. Who was it that wanted to change the Roe v. Wade decision? I mean, come on. Who was it that wants to change tax rates to make them lower? Who was it that wanted to change Europe to create a 1,000-year German Reich? These are all people who are considered right wing. So this idea that the right wing doesn't want to change things is just simply not true. It doesn't square with the facts. But people need this. The reason that people like this idea, there's only one issue in politics and there's a line, because they like to convince themselves that they're being philosophical. Nobody wants to be a tribal lemming. That doesn't sound good. So if you went up to a politician, a Republican politician at any level, and you made a list of all the things Republicans currently believe, and you showed it to them and said, "Do you agree with all these things?" They say, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah." You say, "Well, why?" Now, they're not going to say, "Because I'm a tribal lemming and I just conform to whatever my tribe does because I can't think for myself." I guarantee you they're not going to say that. What they will say instead is, "Because I am a conservative. That's my philosophy. And all those positions grow out of conservatism." So they have deluded themselves into thinking they have a philosophy, and that philosophy leads to all these different positions. And then once they have those positions, they join the tribe that agrees with them in those positions. That is exactly the opposite of what reality is, according to all the studies. The reality is that people begin with the tribe. They anchor it into it because of a single issue or because of family or peer groups or whatever. Once they've anchored it into the tribe, then they adopt all the tribe's different views. And then after they have all the tribe's different views, they believe all these different things. Then ex post, they make up a philosophy that tries to tie it all together. Well, let me explain to you. Let me make up a story. Let me invent a fairy tale showing how all the things the Republican Party believes are conservative and conserving things. It's ex post storytelling. It's not scientific. And it's not rational. So that's the myth of left and right in a nutshell.
And again, making too much sense. I mean, I before hearing this podcast was a victim. I was guilty of doing this all the way. Conservatives about conserving. I used to say, "Oh, it's in the word conservatives. They want to conserve." And the left is about progressives and moving forward. And I did this. So hearing this initially, he's a little off, you know, and I have some other excuses that he's actually going to address in the next couple of clips. But then I started thinking, wow, okay, that makes sense. Intuitively, you feel that it's something wrong because you would say something like, you know, conservatives like to conserve, and then something would fly in the face of that. And intuitively, you would say no. Okay. And you would try to use cognitive dissonance to kind of make it fit into the lane. And, you know, so let me just play on, because he goes on into other examples that I really found enlightening.
So let's take, for instance, you talked about, you know, everyone thinks that there's one issue in politics. There's a single dimension. And a few years back, John Barg at Yale said, "I've got it. I figured out what it is that divides liberal and conservatives. All conservative positions are about fear. If you're afraid, you're a conservative." See, that's why conservatives went to the war in Iraq. They were so scared of terrorists. That's why they created the Department of Homeland Security. They were scared. They were afraid. And they would say, giving up a little bit of our freedom is a small price to pay for security because we're scared. "Ha, got it," says John Barg. "I figured it out." That's what a conservative is. He's a fraidy cat. He's scared. Liberals on the other hand are more courageous. We don't need the government we shouldn't sacrifice our freedom. We're okay with a little more risk. Well, then of course, COVID-19 comes along and it's exactly reversed. Why? It's tribal. It's completely tribal. If Donald Trump would have ordered lockdowns and said the entire country can't leave their homes, I guarantee you, and everybody knows it's true, that it would have been liberals, not conservatives, saying, "How dare he? Our reaction to the coronavirus is worse than the coronavirus itself." So why was it otherwise? Because Trump took a more lax approach to COVID. So it's completely tribal. So the reason there is a correlation, and there is a slight one, it's not as big as people think, right? Let me digress here for a moment. Abortion and tax cuts. If you ask the public at large, "What do you think about abortion? What do you think about tax cuts?" And then you plot it, you find a correlation that is teeny tiny. It's effectively zero, except among college educated whites. That's the only group that correlates among. So if you believe, "Hey, I'm against abortion, I think we'd have less abortion," you're no more likely to believe in tax increases than you are tax cuts. It's just, they're unrelated issues, obviously. The only reason they correlate is because certain people join the right-wing tribe and say, "Ah, I'm in the right-wing tribe. The right-wing tribe believes in tax cuts. The right-wing tribe is also opposed to abortion. So therefore, I'm going to believe both those things because my tribe believes it." But once you step outside of socialization, once you look at people independent of socialization, people who don't watch Fox News all the time, people who aren't constantly indoctrinated into this left-wing, right-wing way of looking at things, there's no correlation at all between those issues. They're completely separate. Our intuition tells us that's true. I mean, if you were to, if a Martian was to come here, if we were just to step out of our skin for a moment and say, should your belief in abortion have anything to do with your belief in tax cuts? People said, of course not. They're just two completely different things, as different as buying, you know, yogurt and tortillas at the store. It's just two completely different products. The idea that we have to buy them together is a silly fiction that we've sold ourselves. So the answer to your question is, why do they cluster in patterns that are predictable and binary? The answer is because of socialization, because people join tribes and conform to their tribes. So why don't people admit that? Because people don't want to appear conformist. They want to appear principled. They want to appear philosophical. And saying, yeah, I just go along with my team. I don't like to think for myself. I just like to outsource my thinking to one of our two parties. That doesn't sound very good. But to say I'm a principled conservative who stands for conservative principles, that sounds much, much better.
Wow. I mean, to a T, described my way of thinking, and many of us, if we are honest with ourselves, way of thinking, you know, join the tribe and then let's just throw everything that that tribe stands for as the principled, correlated, the cause and effect, or you know, whatever the correlation is, that these are the things I believe. And I've done it. And even as open-minded as I like to consider myself, I've done it. So, you've done it. I'm trying to not be like judgmental, but, you know, this is the fabric of our political discourse today. Couple more clips. Usually I don't play so many clips, you know. I mean, it is a review, podcast review segment. But, you know, when they make this much sense, it's hard for me not. So I have one, maybe two more. Let's see how it flows. But here we go. Tangle.
When I talk to people and I mention, hey, these issues don't naturally correlate, that there is no such thing as left wing and right wing, that these packages of positions are not natural, they're socially constructed. People say, well, maybe, but it's a useful tool. It's useful. It's helpful. It helps us organize political thinking. People say that with guilty. Zero evidence. I've never seen a single study. I've never even heard any anecdotal evidence to suggest that that's true. And there are thousands of studies that show otherwise. People who think in terms of left wing and right wing are far more filled with animosity, are less fact-based, are less able to make accurate predictions, are less cognitively able. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of studies that show that when people are bound by ideology and thinking in terms of the left-right framework, they are, let's put it as blunt as we can, it makes them stupid and evil. Now, that doesn't mean they're all stupid and evil people. It just means they're less cognitively able and less morally appropriate than they would be in the absence of these. So I know a lot of very good people who consider themselves left-wing. I know a lot of very good people who consider themselves right-wing. I'm just saying those people would be better and smarter and be more accurate in their political analysis if they dropped the nonsense. So what can we do about it? You hit the nail on the head. I mean, let's stop using a false paradigm. It's as if I lived in the 19th century and I was a doctor. And doctors were cutting their patients open and bleeding them in order to balance their four humors. And I was saying, you know, stop the four humors. Stop bleeding your patients. You're killing them. And they're saying, well, you know, we need an overriding framework. No, you don't. The overriding framework of four humors is doing way more harm than good. And the framework that there's only two issues in politics is obviously nonsensical. So let's just dispense of it. Instead of talking about a political spectrum, let's just talk about issues. Why is it so much to ask that instead of saying he's left wing and then like going, huh, I wonder what that means, just to say he believes in abortion rights. That's pretty simple. Instead of saying she's right wing, just say, hey, she believed in the Iraq war. He's moving to the left. Well, what does that mean? I don't know. Why don't you just say, well, he no longer believes in the Iraq war. Right? These are really simple. Instead of saying Trump is an extreme right winger, just say Trump is a nationalist. Well, there you go. That wasn't too hard, was it? Instead of saying Trump is an extreme right winger, why not say Trump believes in bigger government than the Ronald Reagan people? You know, does it take a few more words? Sure. But does it take a few more words to a doctor for a doctor to talk about lymphatic cancer or whatever it happens to be instead of saying left-wing illness and right-wing illness? Yeah, but a few words is a small price to pay for much more accuracy. If our medical profession said all diseases are either type A diseases or type B diseases, we would say that's ridiculous. Please stop the nonsense. I guess I'm asking back you, Isaac, what would you do if all the medical profession said there's only two kinds of illnesses out there? There's type A illness and type B illness, and both lung cancer and a fractured tibia are both type A illness. And so if you come into my office with a fractured tibia, I label you type A and assign chemotherapy. I mean, what would you say to that? you'd probably be really animated like I am and say, you're being crazy. Please stop the craziness. And you would probably say, why not just say what they have? Instead of saying type A illness, just say lung cancer. That's not too hard. So it's not too hard for us as a society to stop thinking in terms of a political spectrum as if there was only one issue, because there's most obviously not. And instead, just talk about whatever issue it is we're mentioning. If we're talking about affirmative action, just mention affirmative action. If we're talking about income tax rates, talk about income tax rates. Not too hard, not too difficult. That's a great place to start.
Amen. And I mean, before hearing this, this really opened, enlightened me and opened up my perspective, even though I myself was fighting for the, you know, let's not label each other. Let's not use the isms and the is. You know, I still was doing it in conservatives, conserve, or progressives, progress, or, you know, if you are an activist, you will be doing this. But no, I'm talking about let's unify. You know, many people out there making this argument. But even those who are making an argument still ascribe to this kind of binary political thinking. And I'm going to play one more clip. And maybe I may stop this. Let me just play this clip, and then this will be the last clip, before, and then I'll go on to the next, the final comment in the next segment.
Sure. Well, if somebody asks me, are you on the left or on the right, are you conservative or liberal, I say I reject the premise of your question. Your premise is that there's just one issue in politics, and that's not true. So you're going to have to specify. If you want to know what I think about affirmative action, let's talk about it. If you want to know what I think about the income tax, let's talk about it. But that's a false framing. So that's one thing I do. But you mentioned change, how you've changed a lot of your positions. I'm just going to flatter you a little bit here. That is a sign of an open mind. Sir Karl Popper, who I consider the greatest philosopher of the 20th century, he said that's the essence of rationality. What we are tempted to do naturally, and what our lower brain wants us to do, is to cling to a certain belief, grab onto a belief, and then defend it at all costs. You may have heard of the scout mindset versus the soldier mindset, Julia Gallup's book, which is terrific. I recommend everybody. But the soldier mindset is more primal, and we like to grab onto a belief and then defend it at all costs. Rational people, on the other hand, are scouts, and they live with ambiguity, and they live with the idea that, well, all the evidence isn't in, and I'm willing to change my mind. So falsification, the ability to change one's mind in the face of new evidence, is the essence of rationality. So you know you're a rational person if you find yourself changing your mind in the face of new evidence. So that's a compliment to you. Am I as open-minded as you? Maybe not. I try to change my mind in the face of new evidence. Maybe I'm not as good at it. But just keeping that in mind, that neither of these two tribes has a monopoly on truth, because they are just bundles of unrelated political positions, makes us far more likely to look at them in a more objective way. I'm not saying anybody can be objective, right? That's a big debate in my profession. Objectivity. And it's just tiresome, because of course nobody can be completely objective any more than anybody can be completely honest. But that's not an excuse to lie. And we have a moral responsibility to try to be honest and to try to be objective. So it's, you know, it's as if we went to the grocery store and they were sitting out in the front with two carts of groceries for us, and said, which do you want, cart A or cart B? Now, you'd probably pick the cart that had more of the products you liked. Naturally, we all would. We'd say, okay, this probably has a little bit more of what I like. That's how it is when I go into the voting booth. I pick Republicans sometimes, pick Democrats other times. Sometimes I'm just trying to balance power between the two. But what I try not to do is to pick the cart of groceries and then after the fact delude myself, all of these groceries are related. They all share an essential characteristic, and make up a fairy tale about how they all are essentially philosophically bound. That's what our ideologues and pundits in America today are doing. They're inventing fairy tales after the fact to try to explain why all these unrelated positions are related when in fact they are not. Just buy the cart of groceries because you have to. We have a two-party system. There's party A and party B, Republican, Democrat. Buy whichever cart you think is better, but please don't delude yourself into thinking that everything one cart has or everything one party believes is part of some righteous philosophy. That is self-delusion of the first order, and it's tearing our country apart.
Amen and amen. That's from Tangle, the podcast, and that's Chaim Lewis. And now one more thing I'd like to add, because it made just so much sense. And I have this thing, and I'll put it up on the screen, that I call the matrix. The chat matrix is one of the terms that I use to describe it. But here it is right here. And it's a way for me to get through conversations and, you know, differences and to compel people to move towards a goal. And I won't go through all of them right now, but I'll go through the last three letters on the last row, DIF. And it's something I use that's been very helpful, especially working as activists as I do and people with different opinions and how do we move forward. So I have a DIF, diff, make a diff. The D means double down on commonalities. If you have something that you agree with somebody on, and this works for this last podcast. So how do we move forward knowing everything that was just shared on that podcast? How do we move forward knowing this and wanting to ascribe to this open-minded way of thinking, independent-minded way of thinking, or the nuanced party, as me and my friend would hope to create. Somebody would create it one day, hopefully. How do we move through the many obstacles and the many ways, different ways of thinking? So make a diff, a D-I-F. That's the last line. D, double down on commonalities. If you have something that you're fighting a common goal, economic justice, empowering communities, double down on that. Work with the neighbors who align with that way of thinking. Now, what happens if there's a difference in ideologies? You know, you do want community empowerment and economic. You want to shrink the wealth gap, but you have differences on some other issues, affirmative action or religion taught in the schools or whatever. Well, ignore those if the common goal is something that's greater than those differences. So I ignore the differences. But now what happens if there's two really contradictory ideologies? You know, choose life versus abortion rights. That's an F. So if you find that this is an issue that gets in the way, that this is your justice issue, that F, fight injustice. And that's the overriding issue. That's the issue that will determine whether this collaboration or potential collaboration can move forward. Double down on the commonalities. Ignore the differences because nobody's going to be aligned, you know, from top to bottom, and fight injustice. And in my own life, I found that to be very useful in a way that before using this, I would, you know, you would get distracted and sidetracked because we, you know, you have a slight difference in opinion on something that's not really that as important as a commonality. So let's see how that works. Just really quick, what the other acronyms are. COA is actually Christopher Oliver Anthony. CPR is compelling, practical, radical. It's a way for working with the, I'm going to use capitalist system. How do we move through it? And how do we compel us as consumers and the corporations to move through this shift of justice? Or you find practical ways to make it happen and it will change. It'll lead to a revolutionary shift in the flow of wealth. So that's what the others are, and we'll go. And I'm basically framing this entire show on this. So the first three segments were COA, Christopher Oliver Anthony, the second CPR, and the last DIF. And yeah, so there you go. All right, so we're going to wrap it up now. We have one last segment, and it's going to be not too long. You may or may not know that this is the 50th anniversary of hip hop. And that's a music that's actually kind of what we are doing now, even with Oliver Anthony and with everything that we're talking about with the spread love free market model. What we are hoping to do is find revolutionary change in the way the world is. And people may be pessimistic in terms of the potential to actually affect change. This has been done. It has been done in my lifetime. We talk about, if you really get into the history of hip hop, it's an art form that grew out of extreme poverty, extreme pain in the South Bronx literally gangs were killing each other. And this music channeled that pain into love, into community. And this music that started in a rec center inside of an apartment, a small room, grew to be the phenomenon that it is today. And people may not recognize that, especially if you're not from New York and not from that time, which I am, and not study the history of hip hop. You may not realize that this is a shift that happened that really changed the community from neighbors killing each other to neighbors dancing together. And I want to just highlight an episode with one of the pioneers of the art form, Grandmaster Flash, and how he revolutionized and the science and the art and the absolute new way of thinking that contributed to the growth of this art form on its 50th anniversary. So I'm going to play a clip from the show is called Fresh Air, and I used to listen to this when I was doing deliveries in New York City. It's the host is Terry Gross, who I consider probably the best interviewer that I know. I don't know if too many people know of her, but I mean, she's got interviews of some of the most well-known, iconic artists going back 30 years, you know, it's from the 90s, maybe before. And her interviews are so good. So this is an interview, I think, from 1997 with Grandmaster Flash, where he talks about the art of turntablism. And I just want to play this, take us out on this, and just see the art and the craft that was put into this art form. And he anyway, that before, you know, let me just play it for you because it's trying to explain it. It's just unnecessary. So here we go. Fresh Air by Terry Gross interviewing Grandmaster Flash.
The album, at a certain point, is one of my contributions to the art of the DJ mix.
Why don't we listen to one of your now classic recordings, and this is The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel.
You say, one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Fat Five Freddy told me everybody slide. DJ spinning, I said, my, Flash is fast, Flash is fast. Flash is cool, Francois,
Safar,
Flash ain't
no dude. You say one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
That's Grandmaster Flash from the early 80s, one of his classic recordings, The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to hear that again, but this time, keep your microphone on and have you describe what you're doing as we listen to it. Here we go.
You see,
Punch Face.
You see,
Spoon and G, Monster Jam. I let it go there.
The time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
It's a Blondie here.
DJ spinning, I said, my, Flash is back.
Punch Face. Punch Face.
Flash is cool.
You say one for the trouble,
back to Spoonie again.
Time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Into Good Times, Chic. Into Apache on a rub. Cutting it up. Back in again. Punch Face, Queen, another one bites the dust. In. Cutting into rhythm. I'm using Good Times to rub the rhythm against Queen. Good Times by Chic.
That release is so nice, the way it synchronizes there.
Thank you. That's the whole key to it, you know. That's what my contribution is, keeping it on time. That was like the key.
Grandmaster, cut faster.
It's I punch bass, from freedom. Cutting it up. I'm punch phasing good times. Back to good times.
That's Grandmaster Flash walking us through his recording, The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel, recorded in 1981.
So yeah, that was just a little sample of the artistry that was put into hip hop, and that simple idea of two turntables and a microphone just revolutionized the world. And that falls into the second set of acronyms, the CPR, compelling, practical, radical. You had something that's compelling music. And I always use this quote in just about every episode. The role of the artist is to make revolution irresistible. Music is irresistible. You hear the music, you move, you dance, you're drawn to it. And something practical, party, dancing. You people love to go out. You have a practical vehicle for them to channel that compulsion to do something. It's just not a barrier. And leading to revolutionary change, the R. Revolutionary change is shifting the focus from violence to settle beefs to dancing to settle beefs. CPR in action, embodied right there. So that's it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll put all the clips, all the links in the show notes. And thank you again, neighbors. Make sure you support each other. We'll take you out with a track from The Collective. Right here, you see me wearing the hat. Attention. And we start and end every show with this. So you can find their link on the show notes as well. They're offline, so you'll probably just see a link with a image. But anyway, thanks again, neighbors. Join us again next week. Spread love, spread community, support each other. This is Trev, and I'll see you next time.
This microphone and these speakers are designed to amplify my voice, but why me? I have no simple answer. All I can say is, I believe anyone with something to say should be given the chance to speak and to be heard. Well, I have something to say, and I hope you all will hear me. Just remember, there can be consequences for speaking out. I'm forming an all-out assault against systems of oppression.